I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer.
And welcome to another episode of Pixels, the game, the show where we talk about games and not the game where we talk about shows. That could be fun.
That'd be a good game, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's like podcasters, live your dream of being a podcaster in this wonderful PlayStation 1 game.
There's so many tube hero type simulators, aren't there, where it's like you too could be a YouTuber, and it's just, you know, it's like Game Dev Tycoon, only videos.
So do YouTubers play
YouTubers? There is a surprising amount of people who do that.
It sounds like that would be a game
more successful in game than they are in real life.
It seems like that would be one of those games designed for streamers, wouldn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
So I'm Patrick Beja. We're going to be talking about a little bit of God of War reviews, not God of War itself. We're going to be talking about PlayStation 5, a few impressions on a couple of games, and then some additional news. And with me to do all of this is Mark Turpin. How's it going, Terpster?
Say again?
How's it going, Terpster?
Asking. It's going good. Yeah, it's nice. Yeah.
So,
it's a nice day, sunny day in Bristol.
Excellent.
So I have sunglasses on.
One out of three sunny days you get.
And we are happy to be spending some of that indoors with you.
Talking about games.
About Excellent. Video games.
So you're a famous YouTuber and CEO of a major YouTubing company. Surely you have played God of War from start to finish because you've been invited by Snow.
No. Okay. I've played a bit of it. I have. but I've played, I think, about an hour, and it was a very good hour. But then, you know, I read these reviews and
I'm trying to stay away from spoilers, but I will say the impressions I'm getting between the scores it's getting and how effusive people are being on social media, it's one of the best reviewed games in a long time. And it's coming out in I don't know, 3 days now when we're recording, and I might do a special to talk about it next week because I don't want to wait 2 weeks to talk about it. We'll see if that happens. But I might, because it's a game I've been waiting for a long time, and it seems like it's fulfilling many of its promises. The most critical I've seen people talk about it was basically, it's excellent. It's only excellent, you know, like it's in the 80, 90 range and not necessarily 95, which is its average score on...
I only climaxed once whilst playing, so I'm not sure how I feel.
I think it might be one of the games of the year for sure, and maybe... So the thing is, from experience, I'm pretty sure you'll confirm this, but when... companies send out review copies a week or two in advance for reviewers to put their reviews out early enough before the game is released. It means they're very confident in their product. So it seemed like it would be a good game, but I didn't quite expect people to be that positive about it. I'm almost bracing for disappointment now because people say it's so good. It's kind of weird to talk about like reviews as if they were the game or like news. But I guess in this case, it's so good that it kind of is. What do you think? Is it actually going to be good?
They've always been good games in the franchise, but I don't think any of them have been game of the year or applauded in that sort of vein. I might be wrong. I do have Google in front of me. I could have taken the time to type it in, but
I think it might have been the game of the year for some people, but maybe. It's definitely not that kind of, you know, people are talking about generation defining and
It's the sort of thing that if you don't have a PS4 Pro, you should probably go out and buy one for this game. Like it's that level of like to truly enjoy this amazing, immersive, beautiful, stunning world and game that you want to play it on a big TV with the best console you can afford. You know, it's that level of it's kind of like for me, you know, Halo 3 was the game that made me buy my first HD TV because I was like, I'm so excited for this game. I'm so hyped. You know, I want to do it. I went out and bought it and I didn't regret it. It was a great experience and it looked fantastic. Mm.
I have actually looked at 4K TVs like the past week because you need it if you're going to be playing on PS4 Pro. I have neither. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to invest in those, but it's gotten me to look at it. But
And I think it's really great. What you'll notice with the kind of the sequels that have come out recently that have been applauded, or franchises that have come out recently that have been applauded, they have moved away from the previous annual iteration where every year we get a new version, kind of, you know, it's almost like, you know, game mode plus one. And it's great to see that kind of companies are realizing that if they take a bit more time and invest a bit more money, that the potential reward and payoff can be vastly, vastly more.
Well, that's something we discussed. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, finish.
No, that's fine. No, I'm done.
It's something that we discussed when we were talking about the whole loot box controversy. We were saying that companies have moved away from the mid-tier titles. Like we see a lot less titles. Most publishers often published like 15, 20 games a year, and now they've brought it down to maybe 5 or 6, and they bet a lot more on those games. So I think there's definitely a tendency to make higher quality products and not necessarily try to go with quantity and make sure you have quality. Now, obviously, they're not always successful, but this God of War really seems like it's gone even beyond that. It's bringing up, it's not just, and I've said this often, so I apologize if some listeners have heard me say this a few times, but there's, you know, Gears of War, for example, I always take that example, or Halo even, and it's not to hate on the Xbox brand. I, you know, have nothing but love for that brand. But those titles were took a long time to make, the latest iterations, but they were so similar to the previous ones that they were good for the fans, but didn't really change a lot of the perception of the franchises. God of War seems like it's going the extra mile in making a cinematic storytelling experience that has grown pretty much as we as gamers and developers have grown with the series from 10 or 15 years ago, and making it into bringing it into adulthood and making more of a serious/artistic statement with the game, which not many games do. So there's a tremendous amount of hope riding, I think, on this title. And I'm going to be honest, I was surprised that so many people were so positive about it.
I mean, I loved the previous three. And I think I'm excited to sit down and play it from start to finish.
Yeah, me too.
Because it looks like an extremely fun and rewarding campaign. So yeah.
And I mean, the previous three were, you know, stab, eviscerate, lay in beds and bathtubs with naked ladies, and haha, look at that. It's so racy.
And I mean, you had those sort of kind of Shadow of the Colossus style massive fights against titans.
Of course.
And, you know,
tone was adolescent, right? The tone was very. And in this one, we are both fathers now, so that also, I guess, plays into it a little bit with the theme of the game. And anyway, so we'll see. I don't want to, you know, I'm almost getting to a point where I'm sort of bracing myself for disappointment because it's been praised so much.
The hype is so, too high.
Yeah, a little bit too high.
It's Infinity War danger, isn't it? You're like, oh.
You know, the two wars of April, I'm staying away from spoilers for. Yeah. So that's God of War and Infinity War. And both of them are coming, you know, one next week, this week, and another one next week. I can't, like, I can barely.
You're a lucky man. It's all happening. You're alive at this time. Just think, if you were born in the 1800s, you wouldn't witness either of these events.
That would have been too bad, indeed.
And equally, just pay extra attention when you cross the roads for the next 2 weeks. Wouldn't it be could you imagine?
I know I'm like super full of OCD and stress, but I have actually had that exact thought. I was like, I really must be careful about everything, like, for the next 2 weeks. If I see Infinity War, I can probably die a little bit happier than if I hadn't. So I should probably make sure.
I like that. Yeah, as you established, we're both dads. We both have dependents. But truth be said, I really want to make it through that kind of 2.5 hour film before anything bad happens to me, not to
diverge too much from the point, but Infinity War is the culmination of something that, you know, our childhoods.
It's a decade in the making. 18 movies.
No, but it's the things I was reading as a geek when I was 10 and 12 years old and being shunned for. Well, not being shunned for. I didn't live in the U.S., but it was...
Wow.
I mean, the cliques, they're not as bad in Europe, at least in France. But it's kind of the... I know some people don't like formulaic Marvel movies, but I think it's an artistic and pop culture achievement that is unprecedented. And I am incredibly excited for all of this. But all right. Anyway, God of War reviews are exciting, and we'll talk about the game very soon because it's coming out soon. PlayStation 5 is in the news again.
Really? How is it? It's not out. It's not even announced.
The rumors. Apparently, so there's been news that developers have been getting dev kits. So some people started speculating that it might come out relatively soon because the dev kits were out, and so that means that when they're out in that in these numbers and these amounts, then it means that it's probably out in X number of months and probably 2019. That's unlikely. The latest news we're getting, I mean, I never quite believed 2019, but the latest news we're getting are putting it towards 2020, which makes a little bit more sense. We're getting, you know, temporary specs and stuff like that. It's probably going to be AMD. It's still going to be x86, so compatible with PC systems, which means it's the same systems as the PlayStation 4 and Xbox, for that matter. But it seems to me that it might be ready in 2020. I wouldn't be surprised if it was pushed to 2021, because the thing is, there's just no challenge to the PS4 right now. If something changes that comes challenge the PS4, it might still come out 2020, but 7 years is a little bit less than it was for last generation. It was 8 years last time. And I think Sony would like to keep their lead, you know, their established situation, as long as they can before they hit that, you know, generation change reset button. And it's also quite certain that we're going to get physical media, so disc, obviously, and it's still going to be a traditional console. Mark Cerny is back at the helm for the design of the PlayStation 5. He did a great job with the 4, so no reason to not repeat it there. I guess the only thing that the systems kind of seem to confirm is, if it's x86 architecture, it's probably going to be backwards compatible with PlayStation 4 in a more reliable manner than what has happened in previous generations. No forwards compatibility, though. I really don't expect, I mean, I would absolutely not expect PlayStation 5 games to be playable on PlayStation 4. That would make it into an Xbox One X kind of thing. But
Yeah.
So
that would be very strange. But equally, I mean, what's what we've seen with the Xbox kind of push to get the 360 catalog playable on the Xbox One and the X, it's really helped them a lot in terms of content drought There's all of these fantastic games that aesthetically might not be as shiny as some of the more recent releases, but still stand up extremely well. And so it's I think backwards compatibility is super important when it comes to a new console, because unless you have a God of War 6 that's coming out, or a Breath of the Wild, or something that's going to be like, oh wow, I need to get this new console because this new game that is phenomenal is on it. Even then, it's a much harder ask than you're saying, like, look, there's a really good game and all your old games are going to work on it as well. So you've got, hundreds of games you can play day one.
I think that's something that is very important at the beginning. But as we've seen, PlayStation 3 games weren't available on PlayStation 4, and that didn't stop it from becoming a massive success at a time, if you remember, 2013, where a lot of people were wrongly predicting that consoles were going away and that, mobiles and all of that crap was going to replace it. I think it was a lot of tech journalists who didn't really understand gaming who thought that, but still. But in this case, what it does for Sony, I mean, the previous generation, you had parity between Microsoft and Sony. So it could have been important, and there was more of a battle. Here, what the PlayStation 5 does is that it's a reset button. If Microsoft does something around the Xbox at the same time, then you're off to the races again. Although Microsoft, I think, kind of dug itself into a wall with the Xbox One X coming out after the PlayStation Pro, because then they can't really put out an Xbox One, Xbox 2 or whatever the next generation might be at the same time as the PlayStation 5 if it comes out in 2020, because it's too soon after the Xbox One X, especially since it is so expensive and so much more powerful than the Xbox One, whereas the PlayStation 4 Pro is just kind of a slight step above the PlayStation for the regular one. The other thing is, well, actually, that might be an argument to put out the PlayStation 5 earlier, because then you kind of short-circuit the competition, the Microsoft competition, but because, as I said, they can't really put out another console so close to the Xbox One X. So if you put out the PlayStation 5 in 2020, you can kind of ensure that you're the only real next-gen player in the game for a couple of years, or maybe a year. And if you have, and that's where I come back to your point, backwards compatibility, then it plays into it, because you already have the entire catalog. If the backwards compatibility is properly done, which it will be because we have PC systems in all of these consoles right now, then you have the gigantic catalog. There is no reason not to buy, well, except for price, but there's no real reason not to buy a PlayStation 5, which I suspect might kind of replace the PlayStation 4 Pro, and the PlayStation 4 gets a slight price cut, and then you have a very well-structured market offering. So maybe 2020.
Obviously, the longer you leave it, the cheaper the tech becomes. So from a profit margin side of things, they want to hold off as long as they can, because they'll make more for each unit sold, or lose less, depending on where they price it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, overall, I think there's less pressure to release the PlayStation 5 than to not release it. The dominance they have over the market means that they can take their time. And as we said, the only pressure to release it in 2020 would be if they want to, basically, I was going to say stick a knife in the Xbox console a little bit more, but maybe the knife is already there. They want to wiggle it to hurt a bit more as soon as possible. But we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Let's talk about a couple of games we've been playing. I'm going to talk about Moss, the VR PlayStation game, in just a little bit. But you wanted to talk a bit about the new Hearthstone expansion. We don't always, I mean, even not often, talk about Blizzard expansions and stuff in this show. Partly because sometimes we do. I'm not saying we don't always, but partly because I'm so attached to Blizzard that I feel I shouldn't talk about them too much for fear of not being objective. and partly because it's usually expansions and stuff like that, and we try to focus on new releases. But it's been a while since we talked about Hearthstone, and the latest expansion just came out last week, called Witchwood. we were talking a little bit before the show started recording, and I seem to understand you're not super happy about what's happening in Hearthstone.
I am, and I'm not. And it's a strange one. I love Hearthstone, and I love Witchwood. I think it's got some fantastic new archetypes in there. Decks are different to play with because of a few key new mechanics and cards and stuff. So
they seem very really inventive in the kind of mechanics they were putting together.
I mean, they've the odd and even deck archetypes that they introduced basically are just super smart in that they almost create they reduce the cards in play in the standard rotation, because you can only use the even cards or the odd cards if you're running one of those archetypes. So all of a sudden, you see a lot more card variants, even though you're playing, in theory, with the same allotment of cards. You've just elected to make an odd deck or an even deck because of these very powerful legendary cards that will change your hero power.
For those who don't know, that system is that one of the cards is a legendary card that does a specific has a specific effect. If you only have odd cost cards in your deck, so the mana cost, odd cost cards in your deck, or even cost cards in your deck, so it kind of forces you to select a certain inside a certain pool of cards, and it's very different from when you just have the freedom to choose every card you have in your deck, in your collection.
Yeah. So the thing I was chatting about before, though, to you, Patrick, was I'm not sure if I'm right in saying this, but I feel like I want to ask the question of, is Blizzard still the same Blizzard that is it's ready when it's ready, in that there are a lot of weird bugs in the game that feel like they weren't necessarily, like, I don't know how hard it is to catch all the bugs. And I don't know equally, honestly, thinking back to early, Blizzard games, how bug free they were, even when we were very much like, oh yeah, ready when it's ready, stands up. But like, it's strange. For example, they introduced a new card called Camellias, which is a one mana, 1/1, priest card, and basically it changes into each turn, it will change into a copy of a card that's in your opponent's hand. So it's really smart, and it will show you turn by turn cards that are in your opponent's hand that equally you can then choose to play that card that turn if you think, actually, oh, I've got a really good one, this is useful. But equally, the information it gives you in terms of like, oh, he's got this sort of AoE in his hand, I better not overcommit my thing now, or maybe now's the time to push because I see he's got this, so he's going to play this in two turns time, and all of that sort of thing. So very interesting card. But for example, it's got a really weird bug whereby it will retain attack values and mana discounts from some of the cards it changes into, depending on what you've got going on in your hand. So for example,
that can be really game breaking.
Well, yeah. So, for example, if it changes into a hero card, so they introduced in Frozen
Lich
Throne,
King, Frozen
Lich
Throne,
King,
yeah.
What was it called? Knights of the
Knights
Frozen
of
Throne.
The Frozen Throne.
Yeah, it introduced these new Death Knight hero cards. You can actually then have, if it's done incorrectly, or with this bug, you can have a permanent attack value on your hero. So then each turn, you can attack as if you have a weapon and kind of hit things on the board. And it just seems like, that feels like something that is fairly easy to test and or discover. And again, this is speaking from a layman perspective. I don't really truly, obviously, no matter how big your testing team is, you can never put in the same number of man hours as the first hour when, 20 million people around the world are playing your game.
Right, because it might seem like it happens every time you transform into a hero card, but then really there's a number of conditions that have to be met in order for that to happen, and it's not as systematic as you might think when you're getting it, but yeah.
Mm. But even down to, for example, Shadow Reaper Anduin, one of the priest Death Knight hero card, its battle cry, it destroys all minions with 5 or more attack when you play it. And so, for example, people have discovered that if you have Camellias and you have an attack value on Shadow Reaper Anduin over 5, as much as it's a hero card, when you play it, it will actually kill you because you are over five attack. It is so like it's crazy, it's funny, it's weird, but it's like, hang on, this kind of feels like it shouldn't happen. But
so basically, yeah. you hate Blizzard now, and you think they're a trash company, and you don't have to want anything to do with them ever again.
Yeah, obviously. But I mean, it's I think there's a few other kind of bugged interactions with Camellias and Voodoo Doll. So Voodoo Doll is a new one mana. Is it one mana? I think it's a 1/1. It's a 3-mana 1/1, and it has a battle cry. You choose a minion. And then when the Voodoo Doll dies, its death rattle is to destroy the chosen minion. So it's a really cool removal where you play a friendly minion that you want to kill, or, you know, your opponent doesn't want to kill, because if it does, it'll kill his one. You know, it's a fun little mechanic. But that, again, if Camellias gets that and then a hero card, things get really wonky.
But it seems like the bugs are concentrated over a couple of cards, though. It's not
the bigger thing is they introduced a new card called Shudderwalk, which is a new 9-mana shaman card that repeats all of the friendly battle cries that have occurred in that game. So every single card you play that has a battle cry, so for example, there's one called Saronite Chain Gang, which is a, I think it's 5-mana maybe, or 4-mana. It's a 2/3 with taunt. And its battle cry is summon a copy of this minion. So then you get 2/2/3s with taunt. And if you play that and then later in the game you play Shudderwalk, you get Shudderwalk copies itself because it just creates a copy. So it's a very powerful thing when comboed with the right battle cries. And basically what people have discovered is that if you play the game long enough and you have the right cards, you get a near perfect win condition every time. But the real drawback is the amount of time that it plays through these animations as it goes through and repeats all of the previous battle cries that have occurred in the game, is that to play against that card is extremely unfun. You're sitting around waiting for minutes and minutes and minutes as it's playing through. So even if you win the game, you don't necessarily feel that good about having played against that, kind of that deck. Mm. And it's even down to, say, I won every time I was up against a Shudderwalk. I feel like I'm probably better off still just conceding and trying to see if I can have a faster, more enjoyable matchup. And that feels weird as well. So there's certain things around Hearthstone. I love it. I'm very hard on it because I love it. And I just raise the question, I guess, is Blizzard still a
ready when it's ready?
Or is it a, you know, just a very good, but the same as a many other games companies where they want to hit their dates? You know, Hearthstone, we get regular expansions throughout the year. And I know they're working ahead of time, but and they don't give upfront fixed dates. You know, they say, hey, it's going to be out sometime mid-April. But at the same time, I wonder if they hold it back.
I think in the case of Hearthstone is maybe a little bit peculiar in the company, because they do, you're right, they do have a schedule, and it's not precise, but they do release 3 expansions a year now, and they can't put out the first one in, you know, June, because then the other two are compressed. So there might be a little bit of that, I guess. Especially since in this expansion, they might have gone a little bit crazy with very different mechanics. So I wonder, I haven't played it myself, so I don't know, but I wonder if maybe they're not going to take as a lesson from this release, and there are lessons in every time you do anything in any activity, but especially gaming, game companies, maybe they're going to think, all right, let's introduce less new ideas and concepts into the game at one time so that we have time to test all of them properly. But I guess that's the lesson would be a bad thing,
I guess, as well. Because obviously I love all the new things as well. It's that sort of thing where I don't know if it is an achievable or solvable problem in terms of, I don't think employing more people, more testers, you can never actually be 100% with these things anyway. I just wondering if the statement holds true still with Blizzard, or if they have moved on post Hearthstone to being a less precious company because they have so many more releases coming out all the time.
Maybe. I mean, I think, Hearthstone is kind of a special case, but my impression with everything else that they do is that it's still... like, if you look at the games Blizzard puts out and the games other companies put out, it's so polished when it's a Blizzard title, except maybe for Witchwood, which... I will have to see if that kind of experience repeats, that kind of experience happens again. But everything else, I play Overwatch all the time. Heroes is incredibly polished. WoW is always not perfect, obviously, but it's never been perfect. I don't know. But I think it's still, when people are very much into one thing, they might start seeing all of the faults. And maybe that's what's happening here. And maybe there are more.
I think so. And equally, what they have said is they're going to look at, like, Shadowwalk. They said, we're looking at how it plays over the weekend and we'll do it. My worry is they often look at their private internal stats and be like, it's got a 40% win rate. It doesn't matter. And I think
because
it's
people
not
are not
that.
Going to be playing beyond the novelty.
Exactly. And I think it's not even its win rate. It's how does it feel to play and stuff like that. And, we'll see. Anyway, so Witchwood. But still very good. And if you haven't played Hearthstone in a while, it's the beginning of a new year. So it's the year of the Raven. It means that a load of the old cards have fallen away. So it's always the best time to jump back on the bandwagon. You've got less cards as a deficit to catch up on. It's the cheapest time to come back and play the game.
If only I had more time in my days and life, I would play Hearthstone and many other games. But I don't. The Witchwood cards, honestly, seem so fun and exciting. I would love to have time to play. But babies and stuff and God of War. And also... I got a little bit of time to play Moss, a VR game that has been it's been reviewed as one of the reasons to get a VR headset. And it's a PlayStation exclusive. It's a game that, I bought the PlayStation VR a year ago when it came out, a little bit over a year. And I tried it for a month and then I never touched it again until now. I took it out. I figured, it's time to give it another try. There's been a lot of fun things that have come out, and Moss is one of those games that is a system seller for VR, according to many people. And according to VR enthusiasts, I think most of all. So I tried it, and it's good, but I have to say it's not quite the kind of... system seller type of thing that I was expecting.
Does it feel like a game or does it feel like a tech demo?
No, it feels like a game. It feels like a game that is, it feels like...
So many VR experiences feel to me like, hey, it's, look at VR. Look, you can do these things and this thing. It's like, it's not really a game though, is it?
It is a game, but part of the fun of the game is the fact that it's in VR. And what I mean by that is that if the same game was not in VR, it would be mediocre. It would not be interesting at all. But here, so the way it works is you play this little mouse called Quill, and you kind of take her through almost a diorama. Like, you have the environment around you. It's a platformer and with a little bit of combat. And you take her through this forest that has an enchanted quality to it, and you take her through it in platforming and interact with her. Like, basically, you control her and you can interact with a little bit of the environment. But the fun of that presentation is the fact that you are looking a little bit from above or three-quarters view, and it's the environment is all around you. So that VR aspect of it is definitely present, and there is a charm to it. Like, you can move your head around and get closer to what you're looking at and maybe even look behind a few things. You're supposed to be playing sitting down. So it's not a VR game where you're going to be moving around.
But I think those are the best ones. You don't get as nauseous. I mean, there's Lola and the Giant, I think it's called, on Daydream is pretty good. And then there's trying to remember who made it. There's a it's like there's like a strategy game where again you're kind of controlling it all from looking over.
Oh, the dinosaur one.
No, it's blimey, it's got the guys who did Shoe and Coat Sync is the guys who did it. That's a really good one. That's a Oculus exclusive, Augmented Empire. But that sort of thing where you are kind of you're looking down on a battlefield or on a playing field, sat down. It is very immersive because you are sat down looking down on something. It makes it so much better. And there's no motion sickness because you're not walking around with the frame rate and field of vision being wrong. That's what screws you over, sadly.
I agree, and I think this is not what bothers me in Moss. Actually, there's nothing that bothers me in Moss, or maybe the thing that is lacking, I think, in that title is, for me, half of the VR experience is obviously being able to look around and being immersed, but the other half is having controllers, you know, that are move controllers that model your hands in the game world. And that is a huge part of the experience that makes games fun in VR. And this one doesn't have that. It's just a controller. You're sitting down, it's fine, but you can't interact with the world with your hands. You have to use the controller, and that is a very different type of interaction. And I mean, obviously, it wouldn't have been appropriate for this game to have that kind of control scheme. So I'm not saying, they should do Moss with move controllers, because it wouldn't make sense. But it's just, I feel like the VR experience is diminished when I don't have my hands in the game, no matter what they do, because it feels less tactile, less control-y. And so the conclusion of that is Moss is fun, but it's still, to me, and I haven't finished it, so maybe, you know, after a while it gets even more crazy, but I think I get a pretty good sense of what the game is. It doesn't do anything for people who aren't already VR fans. You know, it gives them one more thing to play, which is fun, but it's not going to... What I've heard, which is, get a VR thing to play Moss because it's worth it, I would disagree with that. I think...
See, for me, VR still got the problem that is kind of the reason why I drive a car and not a motorcycle. I don't want to get dressed up for the occasion. I just want to be able to use this thing to do what I want to do. Whereas with VR, I always feel like, okay, I've got to put on the headset, I've got to turn on all the sensors, put on the wrist strap so my controllers don't fly off. And equally, on top of that, I have to trust my surroundings. You know, I'm going to be, in essence, blindfolded, often with headphones on, so I can't really hear anything. You know, if my house burns down while I'm playing a VR title, you know,
when you start to feel hot.
Exactly. You feel hot anyway, because then I didn't get into gaming to be all cardio and sweaty. But, you know, with all of it, there are some experiences that are great, but I feel like VR is always held back by its cost, and it's just the amount of involvement there is in it doesn't feel like it's as kind of frictionless as it could be in terms of enjoying that. Well, however, I have been to some VR arcades, and those are really good. And I think going to an arcade, sitting on a big fake, Tron bike, putting on the headset and then racing around in Tron is really cool. And it's something you would never do at home because you're not going to have a huge Tron bike. But exactly. They're gifted amongst us. But the arcade side of things, I feel like VR really does shine.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, yes, I agree. I guess the conclusion to Moss was it doesn't warrant that kind of getting dressed up, in my opinion. No. So I was a little bit disappointed. But I also tried a game that I didn't try before. It's a little bit older. It's Robinson, The Journey. And that made me sick. It's a little bit older. It's a year old, so they didn't master the movement to not make your inner ear explode yet. But God, anytime you move, I feel like anytime
it's ridiculous. It's something puking. I think it's like 89 frames per second you need in terms of it to feel, and then the latency.
But it's not even that. It's the movement. You know, you're just.
But that's what it is,
something.
Though. Yeah. That's what triggers it is the fact that there's a delay in your movements. You move and then you move,
Just thinking about it, I'm getting queasy.
And like I said, I've done some VR roller coasters, and holy crap, do they make you just want to hurl. And they're not enjoyable at the same time. They're just nauseating. But it is one of those things, the more you do it, the less you're affected by it. But at the same time, I don't want to go through that.
Exactly. Every time I do that, I remember that when I first started playing FPSs, when I started playing Doom on my tiny 14-inch monitor back in, what was it, 91 or 92 or something, I was... After 10 minutes, I wanted to puke. And now, obviously, I'm very used to it. So maybe it will.
Now I barely ever throw up when playing FPSs. Yeah. Yeah.
On very rare occasions.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to more smaller tidbits of news. First, we didn't talk about this because we were out the previous episode, but Spider-Man is coming out September 7th. So that's a little bit earlier than I thought. Oh, really?
Yeah, special, and that's why they're releasing it, obviously, as a present to me. I really like the look of this game. I think it looks like it could be a lot of fun, but I've not played it, so
I think I'm a little bit concerned about the movement in the game. Like the demos, the trailers they've shown with swinging through the city as the webbed crawler is it the webbed crawler?
It's web crawler, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He's webbed as well.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit too fast, or I don't know. It felt a little bit weird, but I'm still very excited for the game. I think that's a huge potential for
finally having... It's been a long time since we've had a Spider-Man game, let alone a good one. And I've always had fantastic experiences in the early Spider-Man games. Yeah, they were just so much fun. Regardless of how kind of perfect they'll be.
Right.
The only thing that makes this less exciting for me is the fact it's not MCU Spider-Man. You know, I would love to have the whole gang there from the movies, but you know, it's still very exciting.
I'd love to as well, but I think if the choice is, it becomes so complicated that I think a well-done MCU game would be awesome, but I think I'd rather have a well-done non-MCU canon game than a, you know, problematic MCU game. But yeah. So the other thing about the release date, again, it's very surprising that it's coming out so early. I was convinced it was going to get pushed to next year, which, by the way, might mean that next year we might see The Last of Us Part 2. I still, you know, I'm not sure, but given how fast they're putting out these massive games that they have at Sony, and those are both first party games, it's an Insomniac for Spider-Man, but it's still an exclusive. I'm thinking for next year they might have The Last of Us 2 if possible, but anyway,
they do have the Infinity War Iron Spider suit apparently in the game that has been confirmed, so I can still pretend
like I'm in an MCU
game. Nice.
Well, and it's older Peter Parker, so maybe it's the MCU Peter Parker from 10 years from now.
Maybe. Good shout.
It's coming out on the 7th of September, and the really interesting thing, we have Dragon Quest XI that's coming out to the West on the 4th of September, Shadow of the Tomb Raider coming out on the 14th, Spyro Reignited, which is not as big a game, but still it's coming out on the 21st, and what's really interesting is that they are all trying to stay away from Red Dead Redemption 2, which is coming out in October.
It'll get pushed again. It's Rockstar.
I don't think so. It has a date now.
Yeah, but it's Rockstar. They don't care. they know that they can just do whatever they want and we'll still buy it all, and just, you know, they can take a big dump on our faces and we'll be like, yeah, thanks, Rockstar.
I'm sure they could.
When it comes out, holy moly.
I think what they want is to put it out in October.
True. So one thing I saw for Spyro, which was interesting, is they were hiring for someone with multiplayer kind of netcode experience and stuff. We're specifically talking about Spyro as well. So it'd be really cool if not only do we get a remastered Spyro, but then, you know, new modes could be in there. But maybe not. But, you know, who knows?
Hey, who cares is more my question, really. I mean, I understand
Spyro.
We were surprised about the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy. And it sold really well. I think they're trying to replicate this with Spyro. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my thing, but I don't see it selling incredibly well, Spyro. So I don't think they can cap it's maybe they will. I don't know. Will you like, are you excited about the Spyro trilogy?
I'm not a big Spyro fan.
There you go. That's what I hear.
I'm sure there's lots of people who love Spyro. So we will see.
All right. So will you buy a Sega Mega Drive Mini? That was, I think it's only in Japan now, but no. Okay.
No. I mean, I had the Mega Drive back when it was a full-sized games console. It was a great, great thing. I had some fantastic experiences, but I don't like to get involved in the nostalgic revisits of older tech.
Oh, so you didn't get Nintendo Minis?
No. Because the thing is they're fun for like 2 hours, and then you're like, oh, okay. And it's, you know, just for me, I'd much rather, you know, play a new game, one that I actually remember better than what it actually is.
Right. I think, I mean, it's going to sell, but I think they don't expect it to sell as well as the Nintendo versions, the Nintendo Minis. It's just like, let's get in on this and sell a few tens of thousands of copies and of units, and that will make a little bit of money, and why not? But I think that's how they're coming at it. And the other thing is Shenmue and Shenmue 2 are coming to PC, Xbox One, and PlayStation 4. So, I mean, it's a compilation for both games. Maybe they're trying to ride the hype of Shenmue 3, which is quickly descending into horror, if you ask me. But, I played Shenmue 1 back in the day. As interesting as it was when it released, because it was design-wise really innovative, I really feel like it hasn't aged well at all, and I'm not sure many people will enjoy it. But if you want to, you can give it
a try. Check it out.
Lawbreakers Studio, Bosky Productions, has announced that they were shutting down Lawbreakers, basically, because it, quote-unquote, didn't find its audience, which I think is fair to say. It basically has had the misfortune of coming out at the same time as Overwatch, and there were many games that came out at the same time and that didn't do well.
Plus, it's called Lawbreakers, which for me, I can't hear without thinking of Matthew McConaughey in Magic Mike. You know, I see a lot of Lawbreakers out here tonight. Yeah.
And maybe people had a different expectation of that game.
Yeah, I was expecting Magic Mike. I was expecting all these, you know, kind of topless men dancing around. None of that.
I'm sure you can still get some of that somewhere on the internet.
Well.
But they're already out with a new game, which when I heard, basically it was 3 days before they announced their new game, which is already available in early access, by the way. When I heard they were still working on stuff, I was like, yeah, it's Cliff Bleszinski. He has to keep doing stuff, obviously. Good on him to, you know, shut down, fold Lawbreakers, but keep the team going and doing some other stuff. And then they got the trailer out for, what's it called? Radical Heights? And I was like, first of all, what am I looking at? It feels like, is it like some kind of weird 80s BMX game? Is the first impression I had. And it turns out it's obviously a battle royale game with a little bit of a twist. But it's got this campy 80s neon look, which I think doesn't work at all. And it feels, you know, there is a way of doing 80s camp well and making it fun. I think this is just campy and not good looking at all. The game itself is so early access, you don't have textures on many of the surfaces. You get like it's 4 or 5 months of work by their own admission.
Estimations. Yeah, I don't think it's...
I'm not sure that's a good move. Maybe they're going to capture something, and maybe they were thinking, you know, Battle Royale, we need to get in on this now. But I don't... I went from, yay, Cliff Bleszinski, to, wait, what? What are you doing now? Ugh, that doesn't seem right.
I'm of the opinion that Cliffy B has some fantastic talent, but it's not that everything he craps out is going to be gold. Mm. And I think that with Lawbreakers, had they pivoted like you saw Fortnite do, you know, Fortnite was a horde survival game that then was like, oh, hang on, this other game mode is super fun. We should do one of those. And then, you know, is now making ridiculous money.
Lawbreakers 15 millions in less than million, a month. From
isn't it
release,
a day? Yeah. 15 million a day, I think, isn't it?
Oh, I think that was the week, like since release 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I see.
But I'm
okay.
Sure, yeah, I mean, it was still being launched, basically. So
it's incredible. The yeah. I was at the video game BAFTAs last week, and I was chatting to Brendan Green, PlayerUnknown, and we were chatting about their mobile kind of version of the game and stuff, and how impressive that is actually in terms of what they've managed to achieve from a mobile perspective, gameplay wise. It plays really tight. It's really fun. It's really, really smart. Fortnite did what I thought was impossible, in that if you buy something on the mobile app, you unlock it on Xbox and PlayStation and PC as well.
Right.
And so what Epic have done in terms of a publisher deal, like, I don't know if they've just not been super greedy or what it is, but you know, these are the same platform holders that mean that I can't play my Diablo 3 characters on Xbox that I play on Battle.net on PC.
Well, it's not cross play, it's just cross buy.
No, but the item, exactly. Like if you buy it on one, you've got it on all. Yeah. And that's incredible. I just think that's such an accessible thing, and that's what Fortnite is, the new Minecraft. In that Minecraft, like, people used to tar us Yogscast. They'd say, oh yeah, Yogs, you're like Minecraft kids entertainers. And it's like, no, you know, when we played Minecraft, it was a really kind of a really geeky indie game that was super complicated to play and set up and all these things. You know, setting up a server, you had to be like a software engineer just to get one running.
Right.
And then it bridged that sort of accessibility gap that then all the kids jumped on board and it became this huge runaway success. Fortnite is at that inflection point already, whereby all the kids are playing it. People who don't play computer games are playing Fortnite, and it's bigger than anything and will continue to be bigger than anything until something else comes along to usurp it. But all those kids who were playing Minecraft, they're playing Fortnite, and it's money.
I can't remember who was saying this, but I've had the same experience. PUBG was huge in the gaming circles, and everyone was talking about it. It was obviously, and still is, a massive game.
Yeah.
Fortnite, I have people who don't really know about games who start talking to me about Fortnite. They're, you know, like my chiropractor is like, hey, have you heard about that Fortnite game? Is it good? Like, I want to get an invite on my mobile. And I was like, hey, I have an invite, I can send it to you. and it's like it's happened to me maybe two or three times over the course of a few weeks that people who never talk about video games talk about Fortnite. So yeah, I mean, between the availability everywhere and mobile and free to play, and yeah, it's I mean, we talked about it last episode. It's doing very well.
And even then, if you go on Twitch, you know, Fortnite's the number one stream game. Right. You know, currently at the time of streaming, it's got about 100,000 people watching it. PlayerUnknown's has 70,000 people.
Yeah.
You know, PlayerUnknown's is still doing really well, and it's just a different type of person is playing that game. You know, it's more visceral. It's a premium price title. You know, it's not in any way to say that, you know, Fortnite did, you know, Battle Royale better than the guys who popularized Battle Royale. It's just they made the Diet Coke that everyone around the world is enjoying. Just super exciting to see that, and equally just to see mobile versions getting so good. Like, I'm amazed how good mobile games are getting. Like, we just need better interfaces, but even then they're doing so well. I'm amazed.
Lawbreakers not around, and Radical Heights, I suspect, is not going to meet success. But who knows? I might be wrong. I wish I'm going to be wrong, because Cliff Bleszinski deserves a break. or another break. It's, he's had a few breaks already. No Man's Sky. Oh, Overkill's The Walking Dead is coming at some point. And they did this thing where the... So Overkill's The Walking Dead is a Walking Dead game that is apparently done by a company that knows what it's doing and that is going to do an actual proper good game. And they made a character trailer that gave me chills, but might have nothing to do with the game itself. It seems the game is going to be kind of a Left 4 Dead type experience, which I'm very hungry for, and The Walking Dead is obviously perfect for that kind of experience. They might have to take a little bit of liberty with the infected, with the zombies, because if they're just only walking slowly as they are in the comic and the movie, the TV show, it might be a little bit boring. But that character trailer hit all the right notes and put it back on the map for me. It was announced like so long ago, people are forgetting about it, but I think it has the opportunity to be a cool game, even though The Walking Dead is not so hot anymore. So yeah, we'll see what happens there. What? Sorry? What?
I said time will tell. Time will tell.
And you know what time will tell as well? If No Man's Sky next update is going to be good. So the game is heading to Xbox One. It's losing its PS4 exclusive, which is probably a good thing for the Xbox One, because as we've joked about it, the Xbox doesn't have a huge amount of titles available. So there you go. That's another one. But it's apparently going to be including a massive update coming soon. It's been teased by the studio. And I'm very curious to see what they're going to do with that game, because it's already evolved so much since release, where it was incredibly disappointing at release. But it's changed a lot already, and they have another massive update scheduled, so I'm curious to see and hear what they do with that update. So I'll be following that closely.
There needs to be someone out there who is going to go back and really review and feature these games that were just absolute stinkers at launch but have evolved into fantastic games. Mm. And I think, you know, Rainbow Six Siege is the kind of the classic example of a game that when it came out didn't work, was a complete letdown, but now, holy moly, what an amazing game experience. Like, I would play that game. If I just had that one game to play from here on out, I think I'd be okay. Like, it is exceptional. It is really great. And if you told me, you know, that was, oh, this was the terrible one, what? And then, you know, we've seen it with Destiny when it came out, had no content. At the end, it was great. The Division came out terrible, now really solid.
I wouldn't say terrible, but okay.
Yeah, just not as good as it should have been, but now really, really good. And, you know, Destiny 2, I don't know, give it another 6 months. Maybe that's going to be really solid as well. I think it'd be interesting to see these games that are coming out too soon, but ultimately are worth that second look.
But that's actually a pretty difficult problem for the press, for reviewers. It's once you've reviewed a game, then it's reviewed. Do you go and update it?
Well, I think if it's had substantial updates, you can go back in and be like, okay, well, previously
and revise
I deducted
your review,
points because of this, but the game today is at this standard. I think that would be great. I think that should be something people do more.
And some are doing this already. I think I mean, that's something that journalists struggle with, or they have been for a few years now. And some of them do go back and re-review games and say, you know, well, the game has changed and here is what it is now. It does happen. But yeah, so it's something that should happen a little bit more, I think. And we're seeing more and more examples, you're right, where games that might not have been great when they launched, and that's too bad for people who bought them when they launched, but become a lot better afterwards. And we'll see what happens with No Man's Sky. Ghost Recon Wildlands is also getting another season of free content, which kind of whatever a little bit, but there's a Splinter Cell's mission, basically Sam Fisher going in there, which might indicate that maybe there's a Splinter Cell coming, which is very exciting for a lot of people. The what?
I said perchance. It's very, maybe.
Yeah, possible.
Exciting.
I went and downloaded Wildlands over the weekend because there was a free weekend, and figured, hey, I'm going to give it a try. And it was kind of acceptable fun. And then I tried to go online and play a co-op mission because it's all about playing co-op. And it's not that, you know, so I did the matchmaking thing and got teleported into, so I had started like played for half an hour or something and figured, all right, let's see what happens if I matchmake and play co-op. And so I found a match, got teleported somewhere, and all of a sudden it was like night. I was in the jungle and there was one other person running around in circles around me in the squad. And then I hear a kind of like, you know, a scope going and I explode. And just before I explode, I could see the three laser pointers of the predator pointing at me. Uh-oh. And it just killed me. And you know, I realized there's this predator mission that's been added that fits perfectly well in the tone of that thing, which is really fun. But getting thrown into it like this was not a fun experience. And it was like, I do not understand what's happening here. Then I came back to my previous mission, but I was still in the same place. And I was like, you know, 10 kilometers away from the place I had to go. And I was alone in the desert. And I guess the jungle. I guess I could have quick traveled or something. But it was very confusing. A very confusing experience. So I don't know how I feel about Ghost Recon Wildlands. But if it's your game, more free content coming already now. So good for, you know, sometimes games as a service are really good. And yeah. I appreciate that. I know that there are some people who think, oh, games as a service, they want to monetize you until the end of times. And I'm like, yeah. But
man, I'd still be playing Diablo 3 if we hadn't.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Exactly.
Come on. I want them to monetize me. Give me more of the game. But anyway,
Shadow of War is getting rid of microtransactions, which is an interesting one because they have loot boxes in that game. And yep. I've said since last year, it was one of my games of the year. Absolutely loved the game. And I've said since the beginning, the loot boxes are not a problem in that game because you don't need them. And I think that's what we're seeing in that move, is that people didn't buy them, because if they were buying them, they wouldn't get rid of
exactly
loot boxes.
Yeah, the and so they got all the stigma for having these war chests in there without actually making substantial enough money to counter it, I guess. Fantastic game. If you get there's been a bit of DLC since its launch as well, with more campaign and all the rest. It is very, very, very good.
Yeah, I really love it. So I this, as I've heard here and there, might signal the arrival of a Game of the Year edition. And they're also reworking the endgame mode, the Shadow War, which, again, I've mentioned a few times, is a flawed design. Not necessarily the loot boxes are a problem, but the design of the endgame is flawed because it's a little bit too monotone and repetitive. So they're doing changes there, which I'm really excited about because it might get me to revisit that game if I ever find time to, you know, revisit old games. Because the Shadow War mode is a great idea, just poorly executed. So if they correct it, I think it's going to be a good thing for the game. And as it is, I think it's an easy recommend for me. So it might be an even easiest recommend with those changes. Final Fantasy 15 is getting more episodes. So that was basically our game as a service section. there's lots of stuff coming for every good game or every big game from the past year. And I think that's good. And finally, Steam Spy is dead. Not long live Steam Spy.
Yeah. So Valve got a bit twitchy about privacy, kind of post Zuckerberg robot Facebook, everyone kind of getting hot on how much data is made public about people's accounts and their activities and things like that.
Yeah.
So they've decided that should be an opt-in feature rather than default.
And when you say that, it's the public profile of your Steam account, so what games you're playing and all of that.
Exactly. So what it means is that people have to manually do that. Steam Spy then loses its ability to scrape loads of public data to kind of gauge, okay, because it had to do a lot of inferring anyway, but was pretty close. You know, if it said this game's selling well, it's selling well. And so it was a really useful tool for game developers, you know, in terms of just seeing kind of what your kind of competition was up to in terms of, oh, maybe we should be doing, look at how well all these TCGs are doing. We should build a card game, or we should do this, or actually, you know what? I don't think many people did buy that in the end. I think we should probably rethink about going too far down this route. So it gave a kind of a feature which I don't really feel many in the industry were that upset about. But obviously, you know, Steam and Valve, they have to focus on, you know, are they going to get pulled in front of Congress and asked exactly. about, you know, kind of things that Congress doesn't understand. You know, I understand why they've done it. It's just, yeah, it's a shame because that's used by a lot of different services out there to kind of find things out about gamers, you know, even with their permission. So yeah, we'll see. It's a shame Steam Spy is being left up as a kind of repository. It's unlikely that there is a way around it or way for them to kind of come back or anyone to do anything that has any form of meaningful information with it.
Yeah, it's too bad, but as you said, like, the privacy issue is so pressing now that it's completely understandable that Valve would make that move. And I think they're probably not too unhappy about the fact that it also means Steam Spy can't efficiently scrape the information anymore. So, but yeah, it's not surprising that they...
Yeah, it's funny. Like, Valve, choice. For example, were okay with it existing. They didn't want Steam Spy to have display advertising. So there was no... you know, they would have shut off their API access if they'd put adverts on the site. They did allow Steam Spy to have a Patreon, and they were okay with a community supporting it. But it was interesting to see that they would, you know, like, kind of where they deem the lines of acceptability.
Mm. Oh, and by the way, you will also soon be able to appear online, appear offline, I mean.
Offline.
In Steam. So everyone's getting to it. Finally.
Because currently you can be offline and you have your friend list offline, but you can't see, you know, it's kind of like, well, if you don't want to be seen, you can't see who is on.
Exactly.
But now they're saying, like, okay, cool, yeah, you can be invisible and you can see who's online. So then Patrick, I can't believe you've been playing a game this whole time.
Exactly.
And you're like, how do you know? Oh, yeah, sorry, I have been playing a game as well, sorry.
And I guess that is also, it has to do maybe a little bit with privacy, although that's just for your friends list. So,
yeah.
All right, and that's going to be it for our episode today. Thank you so much, Mark Turpin, for being on the show.
I've had a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to spend a brief period of time talking with you about our favorite things, me and video games. So,
well, if people want to hear you talk about yourself a little bit more, where would they go?
You head on over to Twitter. I'm the_T, and I tweet about great things all the time. So, for example, what have I tweeted about today? I did a great Witchwood tweet. I said, missed opportunities for Hearthstone Witchwood expansion. Baku, who is a card that you have to have only odd cards in the deck. I said, at the start of the game, should say, the odds are against you now. That's out of that. And that Gen Greymane, who's a card that means you only have evens, should say, time to even the score. So far, Blizzard's failed to respond to my demands that be put in the game. But who knows?
That's a shame.
You can find out if they do if you follow me over on Twitter, just the_T.
Perfect. I'm Not Patrick on Twitter. You can also find me on Facebook, Not Patrick as well over there. And you can find the show and the comments and the notes at FrenchSpin.com, along with another show called The Phileas Club, where we talk about world news all the time and get people from different places to tell us how they think, what they think about what's happening in the world. So you get different perspectives. I think that's a pretty interesting thing.
Yeah, I'm excited. Do you think there's going to be a World War III?
Well, I'm not sure, but we'll ask our guests on the next episode and you'll have a sure answer. And that's it. We'll be back. Maybe I'll try to do a God of War special, as I said, because, well, if it doesn't show, if the episode doesn't show up, it's either that I'm too busy playing the game or that I'm super disappointed and don't want to think about it anymore. So tell me what you thought. Tell me your guess on Twitter. I'm Not Patrick. And we'll talk to you whatever happens in the next episode in about a couple of weeks, max. Talk to you then. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.